Quack, 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 quack.
Well, I love that. Is that Burl Ives? Oh, that's wonderful. The name of the book we're about to talk about is called The Wild Duck Chase, Inside the Strange and Wonderful World of the Federal Duck Stamp Contest. Yes, there is such a thing, and it is a fascinating, fascinating story. We welcome to the program Martin Smith, who has chronicled this microcosm of the duck stamp contest, where intense ideological and cultural clashes take place between the mostly rural hunters who buy the stamps and the mostly suburban and urban birders and conservationists who decry the hunting of waterfowl. Martin Smith is editor-in-chief of Orange Coast Magazine, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable. Martin, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for having me.
It's a great pleasure. This stamp program, the duck stamp, has been around since 1934. It's something that's bought annually by hunters. How did this come about?
Well, to give you a little bit of historical perspective for how the duck stamp program began, you have to go back about 300 years in American history and understand how, as the European settlers settled the continent and moved west, they were basically strip mining a lot of our wildlife. We all know the story of what happened to the buffalo and the bison as they moved west across the plains. The same thing happened to waterfowl. By 1934, those waterfowl populations were at an all-time low in this country. And the federal government back then decided that something needed to be done, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt hired a guy named Ding Darling, who, oddly enough, was a Republican editorial cartoonist, to be essentially the head of what now is called the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And Darling had this grand and very simple idea, which was, hunters are the people who use this resource. Let's tax the hunters, have them pay for the use of that resource, and pay for the preservation of the habitat that allows that resource to continue. The basic groundwork for it was that the government is responsible for holding in trust certain resources for future generations, and they decided that they would need to do that for waterfowl. So since 1934, the federal government has, hunters, I should say, have been paying a self-tax for the right to use that resource. Now, it got really interesting when the federal government decided to open that up to a competitive kind of thing. They wanted to have artists compete for the honor of having their painting on the duck stamp every year. And in 1966, it got even more interesting when they opened it to the public and turned it into this sort of American Idol for wildlife artists.
The stamp has generated more than $750 million. 98 cents of each collected dollar has been used to purchase or lease this habitat. And what I didn't know and what is so incredible about this is a federal program.
It's, you know, it may be the best idea our federal government has ever had. Think about this. It's an $850,000 a year federal program that reliably generates about $24 million in revenue every year. It exists so far off the political and the cultural radar screen that when I filed a Freedom of Information Act request to find out if they had ever done studies or white papers to find out if how effective this program was and so forth, it basically triggered a lot of head-scratching in Washington. That people just didn't even know it existed. And yet, reliably, every year, this little program and the contest, the art contest at its center, continues to bring in money, which, like you said, 98 cents of every dollar that comes in is used to conserve waterfowl habitat. Since 1934, it has conserved an area the size of Massachusetts, and much of that land is now part of the National Wildlife Refuge System.
When you look at the actual competition that takes place, the 2012 Federal Duck Stamp Contest takes place on September 28th and 29th at Weber State University in Ogden, Utah. So bring us to Ogden, Utah, and give us a sense of what will be going on over these 2 days.
Well, since 1966, as I said, it went public, and artists have been competing publicly against each other for the honor of getting their painting on this stamp. And I should say, just to set the context, there's no real prize money associated with this. The winner of the contest gets a pane of their own stamp signed by the Secretary of Interior. That's the prize. The real benefit and the stakes involved here are that the artist retains the rights to their painting, and they can then license that painting for use on products, you know, shower curtains, Christmas ornaments, and so forth. And they also can sell limited edition prints of those of that painting, and many hunters and conservationists want a print of that year's duck stamp. And so what you have is, I mean, there have been years when winners have won $1 million or more. One year, a winner was able to convert his win into about $2 million in revenue. So the stakes are enormous, and it draws wildlife artists, about 250 per year, to enter this program because the stakes are so high. And as we said, it turned it into something completely different. It's the only juried art contest run by the federal government, and it's a chance at stardom, a chance at sort of instant wealth and fame for anybody who can compete.
Tell us about the Houtman brothers, because they have dominated over the last, say, two decades.
I think that's what drew me into this rabbit hole to begin with. I was taking a bike ride with a friend who is entering the contest and was telling me about it. And it wasn't until he uttered the line, "And you know, the Houtman brothers are the New York Yankees of the federal duck stamp contest," that I realized this whole world existed, and there were scandals and legends and heroes. And so I started looking into it. And it turns out that the Houtman brothers, Jim, Bob, and Joe, who live in Minnesota, just outside Minneapolis, for the last 23 years have utterly dominated this contest. Between the three of them, they have won it 10 times out of the last 23 years. And that's almost mathematically impossible, because when you win it, you have to sit out for 3 years. And the only pop culture reference that most people have for the federal duck stamp contest is the movie Fargo. I don't know if you remember, but in Fargo, Marge, the police chief who's investigating the murder,
right,
has a husband named Norm, and all through the movie, Norm is fretting about the fate of his duck painting that year. It's never really articulated what he's fretting about, but the final scene of the movie unfolds, and he mentions to Marge that, you know, he's won a prize, his painting has won a prize, and he says, you know, but it was a lesser prize, you know, Houtman won the big prize. And it turns out that the Coen brothers, who made that film, were childhood friends with the Houtman brothers, and when they were making Fargo, they were well aware of the Houtman dynasty.
It is, in fact, you include photos in the book of Jim Houtman's sort of the progression of one of these stamps, and what I was struck by was the size of how, you know, this starts with a study that can fit in the palm of your hand.
You know, the stamp itself is larger than a postage stamp. It's not a postage stamp. It's a revenue stamp that costs $15 right now. Ultimately, the painting has to work at a very small size. In fact, the five judges who judge the contest every year have at their station when they're judging a reducing glass, not a magnifying glass, but a reducing glass, so that they can take this approximately 7 by 10 inch painting and look at it and see how it's going to look at the size of a stamp, so that they can make sure the image translates at that size. Imagine this exercise in painting as sort of a Zen garden exercise. The rules are very prescribed. Every year, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service chooses 5 eligible species from among the 42 that are existent in North America. And the artists have to paint one of those 5 species. Now, here's where it gets interesting. There is an endless variety of choices they have to make. Do we want this duck single or as a pair? Do we want this duck or goose to be sitting or standing or sitting on a nest or swimming or flying? What do we want to give prominence to in that painting? Its beak, what's the most interesting part of that painting? It comes right down to when they enter the painting. The paintings are judged by the date that they arrive at the duck stamp office. And so the first painting that arrives is the first one the judges will see. So you get the artists sort of obsessing about and trying to game the system. Do you want the judges to see your painting first in the list of 250, or in the middle, or toward the end? There are all sorts of calculations they make. It's like baseball players and their superstitions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a perfect world for obsessives, and that's a great, great thing for a writer.
There are other great things for writers such as yourself, I assume, include the money, the art, the ego, the controversy, the scandal, and, of course, the ducks. You add all those ingredients together, it's quite a story. Give us an idea of how something like this can become mired in scandal and controversial.
Let's go back to what was the 50th anniversary stamp in the history of the 78-year history of the duck stamp contest. This was a big stamp. This was going to be their 50th anniversary. And the judges that year, for reasons no one really knows why, they chose a winning painting. And I should say that the paintings are judged anonymously. No one knows who the artists are. And the judges... the names of the judges are not announced until the day of the contest. So you can't really game the system. So I'm not implying that there was any cheating involved. But what I'm saying is that the judges that year, for whatever reason, chose a winning stamp that was painted by a painter who had used as his model a penned duck. In other words, that penned duck had no primary flight feathers. And so what they chose as the winner was a duck that couldn't fly. In addition, the artist that year had gotten the color of that duck's eye wrong. It was a red-eyed widgeon, when in fact widgeons have eyes of different colors. This was named the winner very publicly during the contest, and there was a lot of sort of hushed whispering immediately afterwards. Conservationists and artists gathered in clumps, federal officials gathered in clumps, and tried to figure out, okay, what do we do? Well, what they allowed the artist to do was go back in and paint in those primary feathers after the fact and change the color of the eye, which didn't sit well with a lot of the other artists.
Because you're basically being given a second chance, and yet
Right. You're
the winner.
Exactly. And that did lead to a rules change, which exists to this day. The officials who run the program now insist that a wildlife biologist be in the room with the judges to judge for anatomical accuracy. They look at things as simple as, does the foliage in the background match the plumage of the duck? In other words, if it's fall in the background, let's make sure we've painted a duck that actually has the plumage of a fall duck. They're very careful and very meticulous about that now, but there have been problems in the past.
There's not much room for modern art here, is there?
Well, oddly enough, there is. Of the 200 to 250 entries that arrive each year, one arrives with great anticipation at the duck stamp office, and it's by a guy in Minneapolis named Rob McBroom, who
Right.
is an avant-garde urban hipster artist. With a great sense of humor. And he decided about 10 years ago that he wanted to try to bridge the worlds of avant-garde art and wildlife art. And those are two areas of art that have very little in common with one another. But he decided to start paying his $125 entry fee every year and entering into the duck stamp contest, which prefers overwhelmingly very naturalistic, photorealistic paintings of waterfowl. Rob McBroom's painting arrives every year, and it's got rhinestones on it and glitter and corporate logos and holograms, and they're really magnificently put together pieces of modern art, but they have nothing in common with anything else in the program. And he does it not just to sort of offer a big tweak to the program, but he really believes those two art worlds need to communicate more, and he's trying to make that bridge.
And he's never won.
He's never won. In the 10-year history of his entries, he's received one in-vote. Now, you need three in-votes just to get past the first of the three rounds of the contest. One good-humored judge 1 year offered him an in-vote, knowing that it was never going to go beyond that.
The book is fascinating, as is the contest. It's The Wild Duck Chase is the name of the book. Martin Smith is the editor-in-chief of Orange Coast Magazine and the author of this volume. Martin, I want to thank you very much for sharing the story with us.
Joe, thank you for having me on.
Terrific. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.